everyone, and welcome to episode 19 of the Well and Wild podcast. This week, I'm bringing you this intro from the sunny Canary Islands. I'm still here, still on my week holiday with my best friends, where I'm spending my last week in Europe with them. It's been such a nice holiday. We've just been really chilling loads, and I'm just so grateful that I could spend my last few days with them before jetting off to Australia and my one-way flight to Bali after that. So I'm super excited. By the time this is published, I will just be getting on the plane at Heathrow to fly the 20-hour flight over to Perth in Australia to see my family for 2 weeks. And after those 2 weeks are up, I have a one-way flight out to Bali where I'm going to be moving to Canggu. So I'm super excited about that. And it's coming up really, really soon now. And yeah, the kind of nerves have gone and I'm just really, really excited. So yes, but this week we have an amazing guest on. Her name is Miff Martinek, and she started out in a corporate job, as did a lot of my guests, but her job was in an IT firm, and she has a sales background. And ultimately, after a couple of years, she realized that it wasn't really for her, and she decided to, she goes into a lot of different detail about the journey she took from the point of realizing it wasn't for her. But ultimately, she ended up training as a personal trainer and creating a fitness brand called MythFit. And that also, part of that journey was moving out of London as well. So Myth kind of discusses a bit about the reasons behind that. But it's really interesting. And one of the main things that I really liked speaking to Myth about was when she realized that her job wasn't really for her, she wasn't sure actually what was for her. And so something that she did, which seems to be quite a pattern amongst the guests that I get on here, is that she decided to go and just do something a little bit different and upskill herself. So she, in her case, she decided to go and volunteer for the Samaritans. So she was literally on the other end of the phone to the calls coming in from people to the Samaritans. So she got trained up in listening skills and you know, how to talk to people who are going through some really tough times. I mean, some of the calls they must have got must have been really, really difficult to hear, but they're doing incredible work. And I think with that story, it you know, that's not something she ultimately wanted to do with her life like forever, but it's just putting yourself into a different situation, opening your mind to different opportunities and trying things out and seeing what you enjoy and what you respond to. And I think you don't always have to have the answers, but go and give something a go. So I think that move for Myth was a really interesting one and did help her ultimately branch out and realize what she wanted to do in the end, which was create her fitness brand. So this week's conversation is super interesting. I hope you enjoy it, and please remember to hit subscribe so that you don't miss any future episodes. And thank you very much for listening. Welcome, Myth. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast this week. I really appreciate it. How are you?
I'm really good. Thanks, Susie. Thank you for having me.
That's all right. So we'll start by, if you could give the listeners a bit of an introduction to who you are.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Myth Martinek. I am a fitness and wellbeing coach, and I'm the founder of named MythFit.
Love that. I love that name. I think it's got such a buzz to it. Okay, so from our initial chat before, like, we chatted about that you kind of came from a corporate background, and I kind of want to start there. So I know that you started out on a grad scheme at an IT firm. So let's chat a bit about the decision around that. What kind of made you decide to go into that as your initial career start, I suppose?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I went through school, got really, really pretty average grades, went on to do a degree at Stirling University in tourism and marketing. Okay. And then kind of came out the back end of that, was working in a hotel that I was hoping to get on a graduate scheme with. They didn't end up running it that year, so I was feeling a bit lost and ended up going down to London to see some friends and just thought, do you know what, if nothing else, if I move to London and start doing something here, I'll end up kind of working it out as I go along. So to be honest, I had absolutely no desire to work in IT, but it felt like finding an opportunity where I knew if nothing else, I could grow and develop my own skills and get myself out there a little bit, but at least I'd be learning some skills.
Makes sense. And there's this kind of thing, isn't there, when we graduate, there's always a group of people that go to London. So if you're not really sure what you want to do, that sounds like a fun route, and I'm sure it'll be fine, pay as well, you know. Okay, so what was your role at the IT firm? What did you do there?
Yeah, so the first firm that I worked for, it was pretty much a telesales role. It was all business to business, but working on developing new leads and being on the phone quite a lot. And then as I progressed in that role and got promoted, I then moved on to sort of sales, business development side of things. Mm-hmm. And then I found that actually for me, I much more enjoyed the relationship side of things. So I moved into more of an account management role, but it was all very much still sales targets and building as much revenue for the business as possible in that first role. So then I ended up moving to a smaller firm. Mm-hmm. After working for them, and the reason I did that was solely down to the guy who ran it, who is probably one of the best mentors that I've had, despite it being in IT, and I obviously now work in the wellbeing sector. He started his own business. He was a fantastic entrepreneur, and I was able to really learn some entrepreneurial skills from him, get out of my comfort zone, and develop my own self-confidence and self-belief and a bit more of an identity around who I am. So that was kind of my journey in the corporate world.
And how did you end up meeting him initially?
It was through LinkedIn.
His
business partner at the time approached me, looking at the skills that I had. And at the time when he first approached me, I wasn't really looking to move. But then, you know, as I realized that what I was doing wasn't particularly fulfilling, I wasn't enjoying it, wasn't necessarily enjoying the culture in that business. I wanted that change, but I still didn't have that much clarity as to what I wanted to do with my life. So I felt like going and learning some different skills, being in a smaller business where I was much more visible and therefore accountable, was probably going to be a great thing, which it certainly turned out to be. So yeah, it was a good move.
Yeah. And so I just want to pick up on something you just said there. So the first role, you weren't particularly enjoying it. Could you sort of summarize how you felt in that role? And was it kind of a situation where it wasn't necessarily what you expected? Because I feel like, and I said this to another guest I had on last week, that when we're at uni and we're seeing these people go to London and start on these grad schemes, we build up this picture of what it must be like and what the lifestyle's like and everything. And sometimes when we actually get there, it's not necessarily, the job and the lifestyle of being at a desk like for that long every single day, we haven't actually kind of realized what that feels like. So was it kind of perhaps something where it wasn't what you necessarily expected, or was there something else that you didn't like about it?
I would start by saying that there's always an opportunity to learn in whatever environment that you're in. So I purposefully look back at it now and look at, right, well, where did it get me? It got me into a role that I then really enjoyed for the next 4 years. So I do very much recognize the positives, and there were some fantastic people there that really, really developed me. But what I did find was I didn't have very much freedom. I felt, prior to moving to London, I lived on a farm with a handful of my friends,
It was
fields and open space and really, really chilled out. And I could, go where I wanted, do what I wanted. And obviously London is substantially different to that. But there was a real culture of kind of partying quite hard. There was a culture of, you know, having the right stuff, looking a particular way. And I felt very, very much that didn't just, it just didn't click with me. And it wasn't the fault of anyone, but for me, it didn't sit with what I wanted. And I didn't look at the people around me and think, they're feeling really fulfilled by this, they're having great lives. I felt like we were all kind of faking it quite a lot. So yeah, it didn't feel particularly authentic or challenging in a way that was going to build me and develop me as a person.
It's almost like the living for the weekend culture, do you mean?
Yeah.
When I realized I was doing that a few years ago, like living for the weekend, I just sort of looked at my week and I was like, how can my week be so drastically different from like Monday to Friday to Saturday to Sunday? And also how I feel about my life is completely different. And then you get to Sunday and then it flips back again. It's just exactly. So crazy that's how I used to live, and a lot of people live that way. And absolutely. When it doesn't necessarily need to be.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think, you know, certainly from my perspective, it showed up on my body. So yeah. I gained, I gained a bit of weight at university, as most of us do. But then I continued to gain weight. I was on typical graduate pay, so couldn't necessarily afford all that much in terms of delicious fresh food. I was just eating loads and loads and loads of pasta.
Pasta.
Exactly. I adore it, but I like having a bit more choice every now and again. Drinking too much. I gained weight. My skin wasn't great. I felt sluggish. I felt uncomfortable. You know, I was wearing... It's down to the stuff that us girls try not to talk about, but like standing in a pencil skirt with your thighs rubbing together is uncomfortable and doesn't make you feel good. Whether it's just physically it's uncomfortable, or you don't feel confident, you don't feel yourself when body's kind of dragging you down. So it was, for me, it was all of that stuff kind of combining, and I think I needed a break from all of that to get back to being me.
That totally resonates with me. I definitely went through that too. And I think that when you start to not physically feel like yourself, whether it's like, yeah, eating too much, drinking too much, or even posture stuff, like the desk making your posture, like, and you start to feel not yourself, it can be really scary. And actually, I think that's when like mental health stuff can start creeping in. I definitely feel that sort of happened a bit to me as well. Okay, let's chat a bit about this. So the second role, you enjoyed that more. You had this amazing mentor, which is really, really great to hear. But obviously, there was still something missing. So could you kind of summarize how you felt at that time where, yes, your career's improved, how you're feeling about the job has improved, you've got this great supporter, but what was still missing for you?
So I think one of the key things that changed that I got the most out of that second role was that I was given some responsibility. I had much bigger accounts. I felt like I got to adult a bit more. It wasn't, you know, micromanagement and fighting for, you know, tiny bit of commission here and there. It was big opportunities that I was in control of, and that gave me a sense of purpose, and that really helped. And obviously I had the director of the company as my mentor, and he was fantastic and really developed me and developed my kind of sales and management skills and relationship skills in a business sense. So those were all the positive things about it. But alongside the business, there was still just that real culture of, you know, wining and dining with customers. I was out for meals and drinks, you know, at least 3 or 4 times a week, which for some people that sounds like absolute bliss. But for me, when I'd been on this journey of gaining weight, feeling really, really awful, not having much control over my relationship with food. And I then steered into a bit of a too strict approach to my nutrition. And I got quite obsessive with it. And then that created a real conflict. And it all just sort of compounded in a little bit more stress for me. And I really got to a point where I thought, I feel stressed pretty much all the time. Looking around me at the people that I was aspiring to, that I was on the path to be like, they seemed stressed and unhealthy and unhappy. And so why was I on this path? And it was a really tough one, because by that point, financially, I was a lot more successful. I had an income that was, you know, far exceeded what I'd initially hoped when I moved into the role. I was, by all accounts, doing brilliantly, and yet I felt like it just wasn't aligned with who I was and what I was meant to be doing with my life.
And that's exactly it. And I think that really what you just said there is kind of why I created this podcast, because you can have on paper what looks like the complete success story, like amazing title, salary higher than you could ever imagined, the ability to buy lots of different things that you want, even a great house in London. But if it's not aligned with your own version of what you deem success, you're still going to feel a bit empty. But that's a really weird thing to kind of understand, even with yourself. Sometimes you're like, why do I not feel happy about these things? But I think the key is what you just said there, that those things are society's version of what should make you happy and not necessarily what actually makes you happy. So I think that's really, really interesting to hear that. And I think a lot of people resonate with that as well. So I feel at this point, when people realize this, you kind of can go one of two ways. You can kind of just spiral downwards and just carry on with it and just feel really shit and get worse. Or you can choose to do something positive. So at that point, what did you decide to do?
I decided that I needed to do something good for other people. I sat with my boyfriend at the time, and we Googled as many charities as we could find to try and find me something to do. And I didn't have, I was donating to some charities. I was doing kind of what I could do financially, but I wanted to actually give my time a little bit more. So I then got in contact with Samaritans, who are a big charity in the UK. Probably most of your listeners will know who they are, but if you don't, please go and have a look at them. They are at the front line of preventing death by suicide by listening. So I started volunteering for Samaritans, went through what I can only describe as the best training process I've ever been on, to develop my listening skills. And I started spending a few hours a week with Samaritans, doing listening for them. So answering calls from people who were struggling in life, potentially to the point of feeling suicidal. But a lot of those people really just felt they needed someone to speak to, and that's what Samaritans are there for.
Wow. And how did you, so when you were browsing these charities, what was it? Obviously they do incredible work, but what was it specifically about them that made you want to volunteer for them over other charities?
So it's not as deep and meaningful as you probably would like, but one of the people that I worked with in my first role, who was the closest thing that I had to a mentor in that role, she had been a Samaritans volunteer. Right. And she, in that kind of environment and that culture of partying hard and not necessarily feeling particularly happy and just kind of drinking it away and all that kind of stuff, she really stood out in that she knew who she was. She had her set of morals and didn't budge from them. And she was a truly kind and great person to be around. Mm. And that sort of twigged in my head, and I thought, you know what, those are aspirational qualities for me. I want to feel kinder. I want to help people more. She manages to do those things, to be that person and be in this corporate job. So it's probably a good place to start.
Yeah, wow. Well, actually, I bet that experience.
I just wanted to help. It was quite selfish as well. It was selfishly motivated. I wanted those skills as well.
Well, yeah, but I think it's an amazing thing to dedicate your time to something like that. So what was it like doing that kind of work?
I think a lot of people would imagine that it would be really, really hard and make you feel incredibly sad. Mm. And the reality is that, yes, some of those phone calls are absolutely heartbreaking. Mm. But the support network that they have in place is just incredible. And I really can't, if there are people out there who are thinking that they want to do something for charity and want to develop their own skills at the same time, I cannot recommend them enough. They are just the most incredible charity. They are so supportive. Mm-hmm. And they really look after the mental health of their listeners. Because if we're not tooled up and if we're not feeling well, there's absolutely no way that we can give the support that we need to the callers. So.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I think you must have such a range of different types of calls in that kind of job as well. And you can't necessarily predict when you answer the phone, what is going to come through.
No, you really can't. And I think one of the best things that they teach you is to just be kind, be honest, and not believe that you're a mind reader. You don't know who's going to call you, and all you can do is be honest with them, be caring and be kind, and let someone know that they have someone there for them. And those are skills that you can take into everyday life as well. That's, you know, the ability to really listen to someone and not feel the need to give them advice, just be there, is hugely important. And I think is really, really relevant to what I do in MIFID now. It's really influenced how I've shaped the business.
I just want to pause on this as well and just ask you, from your experience of all this training of how to react to a caller, if there's a listener out there who has a friend going through some stuff, like what advice would you give to them as their friend and how to, well, listen, I suppose, what would you say to them?
The absolute number one thing that you can do is listen and not give advice. Mm. Ultimately, you could come to me, Susie, and say, oh, Miff, I'm struggling with this and this, but I don't know anything about what's influencing the issue that you're dealing with. I don't know the background of it. I don't know how complicated it is with your family. I don't know what's going on with your friends, with your work, with anything else. And actually, any advice that I provide you with is based on my own experience.
Yeah.
So trying to step away from feeling the pressure to know what the answer is. You don't need to know what the answer is. All you can do is help them work out what the best answer is for themselves. Mm. And just simply be there for them. So number one, give them some support, let them know that you're there for them. And number two, if you want to try and help move them through or at least progress them through the challenge or the issue, then ask the questions that allow them to highlight what the answer might be. So, you know, if it was me in this situation, what would you tell me? Those sorts of questions allow someone to actually just explore a little bit of what their solution might be, because people do tend to know deep down. Mm-hmm. But finally, I would say that, you know, there are organizations out there, there's Samaritans, there's your GP, there's so many organizations around that can provide support. So it might be a case of, you know, feeling that you can have the confidence to say, do you know what, I've actually given Samaritans a call because I wanted, you know, I was worrying about where you're up to. So they might be really useful to help talk through this, or, you know, just not feel nervous and not let the stigma of calling an organization like Samaritans or like Mind, just taking away that stigma of feeling nervous about recommending them because it's what they're there for. And that's where the experts are.
Yeah, no, that's amazing advice. And I know we weren't necessarily going to take it down this path, but I just thought that was really important to share that, especially as you've had so much training on that. Thank you. So that's amazing that you went through that experience and you were doing that voluntary work. So you were doing that whilst you were balancing the job for the amazing mentor guy, right?
Yes.
So how was it balancing that? And did it start to fill a gap that you were feeling in the job? Did it help? Because obviously, ultimately, you ended up setting up your own business. So I'm just trying to understand that kind of timeline and how that all happened.
Sure. So while I was training up and volunteering for Samaritans, I was, of course, still working my very busy corporate job. So I kind of juggled it around working kind of night shifts and things for Samaritan so that I could fit everything in. And I think what I was hoping that it would do would just be, it filled the gap of me feeling the need to help people.
Mm.
Instead, what ended up happening was it kind of reignited the fire in me of, actually, I really want to help people. That's what I feel passionate about. That's where I want my life to go. And how am I going to make that happen? So I started at that point then looking at my nutritionist qualifications, and I think as well for me, as with most people who get into this industry, we'd be doing a disservice to say that we aren't trying to fix ourselves at the same time. All of us have got our own hang-ups and our own things that we've had to work through. And for me, my relationship with food went through a real phase of not being particularly great. I had a real fear of regaining weight, but, you know, obviously that is the worst possible thing that could ever happen to anyone at that point. So, you know, I wanted to get knowledgeable about those things and start moving away from that feeling of kind of anxiety about what my body was going to do next. I felt like I had no control. I hadn't really understood how I lost weight when it did come up. I didn't really know what I was doing. So I went through a phase then of gathering up some qualifications. So I qualified as a nutritionist, as a personal trainer. I started reading. I think the first book that I read, I'm looking at my bookcase, was The Goddess Revolution by Mel Wells.
Okay.
So I read that book to try and, you know, loads and loads of books to just start getting a little bit more in touch with myself, what my passions are, what I wanted to do. And then at the same time, I started squirreling away money to make sure that I had the funds there when inspiration finally struck.
This is so interesting because I'm really, really picking up on a theme with people now. I've done quite a few of these podcast episodes so far, and people who have transitioned out of corporate, there's two things that they seem to do when they suddenly realize, okay, this isn't what I want to do, before they quit. And it tends to be one, upskilling themselves, so going and qualifying in something else, and two, just massively educating themselves through reading or podcasts or anything. So it's really interesting you said that as well. It definitely seems to be a theme. So that's great, and that sounds like you were really getting a lot more skills and I guess almost even shopping around, if you like, testing the waters and different things. How did you settle on something and how did you choose what type of business you wanted to start?
So at the time, on a kind of more personal level, my now husband is in the military, so he was coming up for being posted. So we were faced with the opportunity to move. And I think at that point I was quite ready to leave London. So I I used that kind of upcoming move as my catalyst for change. So I looked at what I wanted to do and decided that I definitely wanted to work in fitness and well-being and kind of that whole industry. That's where I wanted to be. And to be honest, I'll hold my hands up. I still didn't have a clear picture of what I wanted. And certainly the business today is different to what it was a year and a half ago. But I thought, I've got the funds to be able to go and explore what I'm doing and what lights me up and what makes me feel good. So I took on some personal training clients. I started running fitness classes. And I spent the first year figuring it out.
Did you still have a job at this point, or this is when you had left London and it was the first year?
So I had left London, but I still worked part-time. So my boss was great. He allowed me to go down to part-time hours. Mm. So it meant that he got a good handover, but also I had the opportunity to dedicate some of my time to the new business.
So I was lucky in that first year that I spoke to my manager. I had a fairly upfront conversation with him and kind of talked through what I wanted to do, and he's very supportive. So he let me work kind of half part-time for him. So I was up in London a couple of days, 3 days a week, and then I was working on building up a PT base and classes in Wiltshire, where I'm based now. So that kind of gave me the opportunity to kind of dip my toe in a little bit. And there's probably pros and cons in that, but you know, it worked for me at the time. And the fact that I'd spent some time saving some money up so that I wasn't financially stressed really helped to make sure that I could just focus on continuing to skill up, continuing to explore what I enjoyed, and making sure that I was building a business that I was really, really passionate about.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's such a good lesson as well. And for anyone listening that is thinking about starting their own business and ultimately wants to leave their job, I think this option of working part-time is such an interesting one. And it's, I kind of take this, if you don't ask, you don't get situation, because if you are 100% behind your business and that ultimately you've decided that's what you want to do one day, like, you might as well ask and see what the situation is and see if they'll let you work part-time, because what's the worst that can happen? They say no, in which case you go and find a part-time job somewhere else. Yeah. Or the best case, they say yes and you don't have to go through the whole annoyance of learning the ropes at a new place. And then you've got time to start your business with still a bit of income, which is a great sort of like help, I suppose, in terms of the transitional phase.
Definitely. And I'd say making sure I was very, very lucky in that my partner supported me financially, and also that I had funds saved up. I'd been saving for, you know, the year prior specifically so I could have a bit of freedom. And the reason I did that was not because I thought I'm going to set up my own business and I'm going to go for it hell for leather. It's because I still knew that I hadn't quite worked out where I wanted to be. I knew what I wanted to be in the wellness industry, but I didn't really know what my message was. I didn't really know what I was about. So I had to get into it to start identifying what my niche was. And I think there's a real pressure, isn't there? If you're going to jump ship, if you're going to get out of the corporate rat race, there's a real pressure to know exactly what you're going to do and make a success of it straight away. But the reality is, if you're doing something new, you're not an expert yet. Mm. So you have to give yourself the opportunity to learn the ropes. You have to educate yourself. You have to put yourself in a situation where you can learn and focus and develop your own thinking. And I think that giving yourself permission to do that and giving yourself permission to be a bit shit at your job day one and learn and improve is really, really important. But you have to have that sort of humility and that belief that you will get there. You just need to give yourself the time to do so.
I totally agree. And I on the saving thing as well, that triggered me too. Like, I definitely went through that as well. And I started saving 3 years before I ended up quitting my job. But at that point, I thought all I knew was I wanted my own business, nothing more than that. So instead of, like, some of my friends saving for a house, I'm saving for a business fund. Well, I don't know what that is yet, but I'll thank myself one day. And I definitely, like, I'm thanking myself now. So, like, it's just kind of an alternative to saving for a house, or, you know, what other people save for, I suppose.
Exactly. And you know, it's just currency, right? It's just a means to an end. And for me, it was the right thing to do, to save up that money and to spend it on developing myself and all of my skills, because ultimately my husband's in the military, we live in military housing, we've got that side of things looked after. There isn't that same pressure, and again, I do think it is social pressure to start owning, to own my own house right now, because it's not needed. So, you know, I'm grateful that I have that opportunity as well, even though it does throw up its own challenges.
Yeah, I hear you on that. Okay, so let's talk a bit about how you've built your brand over time then. So you're now in this situation where you're working part-time, so presumably at some point that job ended up going and you built your brand up. So let's talk more about what you actually built in the end.
Yeah, so My business has morphed quite a bit since I first started out. I thought originally that I wanted to spend loads of time focusing on nutrition. And the reality is that personally, I find nutrition a little bit dull. I strongly believe that most people know what they want to eat, what they should be eating, but they can't actually execute. And that's where the emotional side of it comes in. That's where the mental side of it comes in. And the physical side of, you know, being exercising properly, so you want to fuel your body and you have that more positive relationship with your nutrition. So I moved away from that quite quickly, and I have ended up building a business that's primarily focused around delivering fitness within the community, and we focus on delivering fitness and well-being for normal people. So we love the word normal, and I would say that, you know, my mission and the thinking and the reasoning behind absolutely everything that we do is to bring normal back into fitness and health and well-being. We've just got really far away from it these days. It's all extreme diets, and it has been as long as I can remember. It's extreme diets, or it's lose, you know, 12 pounds in a week, and it's crazy out there stuff, which just completely alienates from someone who's trying to get on with living their life and looking after
it's all
their
a headline
health.
Isn't it, the people trying to get a headline, but really the best results would be if you just strip it back to basics.
100%. And I think my, you know, our main goals are to impact as many people as we can, to give them permission to take responsibility for having their own health their way, and to normalize that. So I, you know, you look at the statistics in our country, you've got what, 4.7 million people with diabetes, 7.4 with heart disease. It's 30% of the population have got back pain, and yet most of the wellness industry are squabbling over whether keto or intuitive eating is right. For me, you've just completely missed the point. What we need is for people to work out what's normal, keto or intuitive eating or the anti-dieting movement. That isn't going to help anyone. What's really going to help is people taking control of their own relationship with their bodies and taking control of how they eat, how they move, and how they feel about all of that stuff. So our mission overall is getting that normalized approach back into fitness and well-being. So we do it in two ways. First, way that we've got the foundation now is we have a whole group of members who work on their fitness together in classes with us. We do well-being talks. We cover off loads of topics that are really important to them, whether it be pelvic floor health or postural stuff, loads of different health and well-being issues, and we'll talk about those and educate people and empower them to make some changes in their own lives. And the other side of what we're doing, the work that we do in schools. So I partner with one school at the moment to deliver their health and well-being strategy. And that is everything from looking at fitness, looking at well-being for their pupils, for staff. We're looking at decent talks for parents as well. So it's really building out how we create human beings that feel normal and comfortable and confident about looking after their own health, and that they understand that health for some girl called Miff, or, you know, someone called Susie, is completely different. We're different people. You know, there's a really good foundation that everybody needs to be educated on, that they can look after themselves. But beyond that, you have to start looking at what you want and what your beliefs are, and shaping that for yourself.
That's so refreshing to hear, and it's really refreshing to hear that you've created a brand like that and with that message, because I totally agree with you. It can be so confusing out there at the moment, and I just think also the work that you do at schools is great as well, because otherwise these kids are going to grow up like with Instagram and all of these social media from very, very young, and with all these crazy messages and extreme things out there, I guess they're at risk of being really, really influenced when it's not, the reality is that it doesn't need to be that way to be healthy. And actually some of those things can be really unhealthy.
I think so. And I think, you know, I'm not sitting here saying that I'm never influenced by looking on Instagram and seeing someone who's got an incredible figure or is super, super fit and thinking, wow, that's amazing. But when that stops being inspirational and you can turn your phone off and then think, actually, I feel inspired to go and do some burpees in the living room, or I'm going to go to the gym, or I'm going to go do something that's fun for me. When that stops being that and starts being something that you then guilt yourself over, and you start being really negative about, and you feel further and further and further away from a position where you can take control of your fitness and your well-being, that's when it gets negative. So it's giving people the tools and the, I guess, the social permission to carve out their own path.
That's great. And I'd love to ask you as well on this kind of thing, where if you had any advice for people or any listeners that were out there that have corporate jobs that want to become a PT or a fitness instructor. So I hear this quite a lot lately, like people that maybe grew up with a passion for sport and fitness, and then you go into a desk job and you just lose all of that. And then after a few years, they realize, oh, I really miss that. And there's a lot that I feel, I don't know if it's because I've recently joined the industry, but I feel like there's an emergence of a lot of PTs and fitness people now, and it's becoming like more normal to go into that. So do you have any advice for someone that might be listening in that situation?
I think I would say, work out what your why. Why do you want to do it? Is it because you miss it for yourself? In which case, try and plug that gap first. But if you have being a personal trainer, ironically, doesn't mean that you have loads of time to exercise. Being a fitness instructor doesn't mean that you get really fit. I have to proactively go and find other classes. I go to CrossFit classes, I go to the gym myself, because if I'm in a fitness class, I'm not worrying about what I'm doing. I'm making sure that everybody in a really, really mixed group is performing at their very best, and that's a very different level for each of those people, and depending on what their body shape is like, their form looks different, and you have to be on top of that. So ironically, moving into the fitness industry isn't the best way to get fit. So I would say that if it's a case of trying to plug the hole of I want to be fitter and I want to take more time for my own well-being, you can do that today without starting up your own business in this industry. If it's a case of you are really passionate about helping people and that you want to make a change, then work out who you want to help and start thinking about what they need and speaking to those people and understanding what their challenges are and what problem it is that you're going to fix. And what lifestyle elements that you want to give them, but also give yourself. So if you want that flexibility and freedom that comes with owning your own business and working, you know, for say the morning one day, the afternoon the next, then you think about all of those elements before you take the plunge. And like we've already discussed, it's that choosing a path where you have got enough financial backing that you can have that freedom to explore without the pressure of, oh my God, how the hell am I going to pay rent this month? Because I've just sacked in my well-paying job and I don't have any clients yet. And I don't really know how to market myself or do anything like that. So I think that's really quite key, is to make sure that you're doing it for the right reasons. And then you know, if you know that you want to help people, that you know who you want to help.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. And I think as well, pick up on what you said earlier about dipping your toes in almost whilst you have your job. Like, you can go and do a course and see whether you like it, or you can go and like read up on a biography of someone that's done a similar thing and get a feel for it, kind of thing. Cool.
Yeah, and ultimately there's podcasts out there. You know, what you're doing is fantastic in terms of you can sit and listen to my experience or any of your other guests' experience and think, actually, that doesn't sound like it's for me, or that gives me a bit of insight that I hadn't thought about before. So it's that ability to be open-minded and understand that if you're moving into something new, you don't know it all yet. So that's okay. Just work your way through it.
Yeah, such good advice. Okay, we're coming up to time now. So I normally end on a little quick fire round.
Okay.
So the first question, and I feel like this is good because you've got your bookshelf there, you already referenced it. What's the best book you've ever read?
So one of the books that I wouldn't say it's necessarily the best book I've ever read, but a book that I have such positive feelings about is the book One Day by David Nichols.
Yeah.
Which is just, it's just a really lovely story. It was then made into a movie, but I sound so exceptionally girly, but I think the reason I loved it was because it was given to me by a boy that I had a huge crush on. And he went traveling and I just had this big romantic notion about it. So I just had all these really positive connotations about this book. So it's a really, really lovely read. It's, you know, it's a lovely kind of romantic story, which slightly ends in tragedy, but it is lovely. It's a really, really good book.
Nice.
I guess more topically, the one I would say, I've just finished listening to the audiobook, is a book called Key Person of Influence. Okay. By Daniel Priestley. And as an entrepreneur or someone who's setting up your own business, it is an exceptional listen or read. He does massive amounts of work with entrepreneurs. So that's one I would actually proactively recommend.
Amazing. Cool. And I'll link that in the show notes in case anyone wants to read it. Okay. So question two, this podcast is called the Well and Wild Podcast because I believe that to be well in life, you need to do some wild things and dare to go against the norm. So what's the wildest thing you've ever done?
Oh, I'm so boring. I don't really, I don't really go crazy. I've never been to a festival. I don't. Yeah, I'm not a big.
But it could be in business. It could be
a crazy person.
I feel like anybody who has left the corporate world, almost that's what my metaphor is. In a way, it is quite wild to go and do that. So it could be in business. It doesn't necessarily need to be like a skydive or anything.
Okay. Well, one of the things I've done recently. I mean, obviously, starting up my own business is a fairly wild move. However, you know, I felt like it was a pretty well calculated one. But one of the things I've done more recently is, and I feel like a massive child having done it, but we bought a white van and we are in the process of converting it into a day camper.
Cool. Just because
it's fun. So my husband and I are two crazy dogs, spend our weekends and spare days in the countryside, pitch up in our
nice,
at the moment, white van with a couple of windows in it. pitch up and it just gives us freedom, and it kind of goes against the grain of being a proper adult, that we just still go and have fun. But it's one of the best decisions that I've made recently. It's a really good one.
Oh, I love that. That is actually one of my dreams that I definitely want to do in my life. Like, take a van, live the van life, and go like 6 months and travel around and just, be amazing.
Yeah. I mean, that's at the moment, so cool. we look pretty dodgy because it is just a white van with a couple in it and a pair of dogs in a crate.
That's so funny.
But it will get there. It will get there. It will look great one day.
Oh, I love that. Okay. And then finally, what's the best piece of advice that you've ever received?
Oh, this one goes back to my Samaritan's days. And I think I've already said it. It's just that nobody is a mind reader. So stop pretending to be. And that actually that gives you a whole load of freedom to just take people at face value. Mm. You're not expected to, nobody expects you to know stuff automatically, and taking the pressure off yourself to know the answer all the time is really, it's a massive relief and it's a massive weight off your shoulders. And that it's okay that you need to ask for help and that you're not an expert. So I think that that's one of the best things that I've ever been told, is just to accept that you don't know what someone else is thinking. They're probably not judging you. You're probably not messing up as much as you are in your head. That's just your internal one. So just let it go, let it be.
Yeah, no, that's really powerful. Okay, thanks, Miff. We've come up to time now, but where can the listeners find you and your brand?
So we're online, basically Googling Miff Fit. Mm-hmm. It'll come up, or you can Google me, Miff Martinek. I have a fairly unusual name, so I link straight through to all of my business pages.
Okay, nice. And I'll add those links on the show notes as well, so people can go and find them. But thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It's been great. Yeah.
So that's the end of the episode. Thank you so much for listening. Please remember to hit subscribe. And if you did enjoy this episode, I would be very grateful if you could send it on to one friend so we can kind of grow the reach of this podcast together. That would be amazing. Have an amazing week, and I shall chat to you next week.